You're listening to Me and Paranormal You with your host, Ryan Singer. It's more fun to believe.
Third year bonus.
Everybody, thank you for listening to another 30-year bonus. This is another episode of Me and Paranormal You. This is your buddy, Ryan Singer. I'm coming to you from the watering hole. We are getting ready to embark on what I've been calling the shapeshifter summer, or the shapeshifter summer. I've been trying to just dive back in and deep dive to a certain degree. Well, to a deep degree, I suppose, on information about shapeshifters that may be new to the world in the last couple of years since I've really dug deep into trying to research and find. You can go to message boards, you can go to Reddit, you can go to places, you can go to YouTube. You can read people's experiences. Sifting through some of that it's a little bit daunting. All we really truly have is our own experiences plus, what I would consider to be evidence of other people's experiences, whether they've written them down or they've shared them, on podcasts or however else, or recorded video of them. Excuse me. I've had some, caffeine. Anyway, what's exciting about this is that I do feel like when you step away from something, when you step away from a phenomena that you were hyper infatuated with and obsessed with for a while, especially for those of you who don't know me, I'm a stand-up comedian. I have been for over 20 years. And, many years ago, I had an experience with someone who I witnessed shapeshift. And this sent me, as you can imagine, onto so many different journeys in my life. And now we've been doing the podcast for, coming up on 10 years. And are we any closer to finding answers to, or am I any closer to finding answers to what I've been trying to figure out? And off the top of my head, I can tell you that I have had conversations with three different people who have witnessed shapeshifting. So including myself, that would be four. I mean, Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins is the famous one that everyone always talks about. It's interesting because I think that episode of Howard Stern came out just a few months after I dropped the initial, interview with my ex. Maybe 6 months or they were within the same year. There was a moment there where maybe shapeshifting had just the tiniest little blip on the radar of the zeitgeist. Nowadays, there's even podcasts called shapeshifting stuff. And, half of them aren't even about the paranormal. But this is what I've come to understand. I've had quite a journey when it comes to trying to understand this. And to try to answer my own question, am I any closer to understanding the phenomena of shapeshifting, the paranormal phenomena of shapeshifting, 9+ years later, since the beginning of the podcast? Obviously, I was looking for answers before I started the podcast, because my experiences with this person were years before I even started the podcast. The answer is maybe. The answer is, I think maybe. Maybe so, I think, kind of, probably, possibly, peradventure. Let me tell you why. I kind of got loud there. This is something that occurred to me just a couple days ago, and I cannot believe it took me this long. But maybe that's just the way of things. Maybe it took me this long because it was going to take me that long to figure that out or to get to figuring on it. What I mean is this. I wrote down some thoughts. Let me just read them directly from the page. Hopefully my writing is, it's not all jabberwocky, meaning just distorted. And here we go. I've always been fascinated with the paranormal phenomena of shapeshifting, as it was what ignited my quest to know more and try to better understand the mysteries of the universe. I think I have made a huge mistake. I'm not sure why it took me so long to fully understand this mistake, but it is better late than never to remedy it, I suppose. I do not think shapeshifting is a type of paranormal phenomena. I no longer believe that. If we are to look at the wide array of phenomena and try to find the qualities or the commonalities between all the forms we consider to fall into the paranormal realm, I think what we'll understand is that there are fundamental principles and foundations of paranormal phenomena. And we quickly realize that there are a few things that occupy almost every space, every corner of the paranormal world, if not as a fundamental principle of all of those spaces. Shapeshifting is not a paranormal phenomenon. It is part of every paranormal phenomenon. It is one of the foundational pieces of paranormal phenomena. It is one of the characteristics of the paranormal. When we examine history, literature, and folklore, we are commanded to pay attention to one very interesting commonality. Shapeshifting is present in all cultures and has been since the beginning of storytelling and writing and passing on oral traditions. Is this a coincidence? It is likely no accident that this phenomena is present across all cultures in their stories and their beliefs long before these cultures were connected with trade or through exploration. So this begs the question, why is this one of the topics that seems so strange even to those who are interested in the world of the paranormal? Shapeshifting is usually met with a high level of skepticism when it is brought up, and I can attest to this personally, as I have been sharing my story privately and publicly for 15 years at least now. Most people will write me off as insane or that I'm out of my mind or crazy in some way, especially if they do not know me. It's something that I have come to expect over time. We can listen to firsthand accounts and put our faith in the human story if we choose, or we can look back to the beginning of human history, at least recorded human history, and see that stories of shape-shifting have been with us from the very beginning and probably serving more purpose than just to tell a good story. To this point, the oldest story that we have, the Epic of Gilgamesh, believed to be written around 2100 BC or BCE, includes the phenomena of shape-shifting. Now, Ikinda, I believe is the name, is not considered to be a shapeshifter necessarily, but shapeshifts. Or, I'm sorry, not Ikinda. Humbaba. Where's my Epic of Gilgamesh? Let me bring this up. Humbaba. Humbaba, who is the, I guess we could say, the antagonist of the story in the Epic of Gilgamesh, even though those lines are pretty blurry, quite frankly. So the Epic of Gilgamesh, which is the oldest, most people will agree, is the oldest written story that we have. Shapeshifting is part of that, is part of that story. Ghosts are part of ancient stories. Almost all of them, almost all of the greatest stories ever told, and especially religions, are paranormal in their foundation. So what I'm saying here is, what, you know, I kind of, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a curveball when I was like, you know, I no longer believe that shapeshifting is a type of paranormal phenomena, because I don't. I do believe that it is one of the foundational principles of paranormal phenomena. Now, this kind of changes things for me in a way that I'm just trying to examine shape-shifting from a slightly different angle. I'm trying to move to the side. I'm trying to circle around and try to get a fresh and a new vantage point on this thing that has changed my life and has sent me on a course. You know, let's just say that anybody who goes on a journey, right, is, let's just call it a hero's journey. I'm not calling myself a hero. But when you experience something that profoundly changes you and changes your worldview and what you believe in, this is one of the major components of Joseph Campbell's hero's journey, right? And what lessons do we learn along the way that we can come back and, you know, and what have we learned and you know, what can we bring back to the village where we originally came from? Coming back to the village where I originally came from would be the people who believe in the paranormal but aren't that into it in a way of personal affected or haven't been deeply affected on a personal level by the paranormal. I should say it like that. Many, many people are highly interested in the paranormal, but they've never had their life majorly affected by a paranormal experience or an SPE, a spontaneous paranormal experience, or even one that they sought out. So maybe that's the group that I'm supposed to bring information back to from this journey that I've been on. Now, when we look through history and through time, and we try to, it's a fool's game to try to figure out what's a story and what's history, right? And, you know, there's so much of that when it comes to what I've been researching and really deep diving into. Look at the tapestry kind of waving behind me because that's the air conditioning, but it is kind of a trippy, if you're watching this, which you can watch on YouTube, it is kind of a trippy thing there. Trying to differentiate between a story and a historical account. That's not an area of the world that I'm trying to like plant an expert flag or anything like that. I'm not saying that I can do that. But the deeper I dig into the Bridge, the documentary series, which by the way, I cannot wait to, share some of the stuff. I have to show my patience because I've got a lot going on right now that I'm trying to juggle. But what I can say for certain is all of this research that you do, and like, especially from, you know, when you read like Robert Temple's The Serious Mystery book and what he lays out is ultra fascinating. It's, you know, difficult to read at times because it's dense. It has so much information that it's difficult to keep track of everything in one's brain, at least it is for me. But it's almost like a college book, right? Where you're supposed to be taking notes the whole time you're reading it. And, you know, I put little bookmarks in there, but I don't take handwritten notes because I'm usually reading before I go to bed. So I don't have a setup in my bed where I'm doing that. But what we have is we have someone who seemingly, from what I can tell, is very excited about what they are trying to share. And imagine that feeling for a moment when you are putting pieces together and able to lay it out for somebody, for strangers, hopefully, that will someday discover your work. It's got to be a very exciting moment. And I'm going to talk more about that. But real quick, we're probably going to pause here I'm going to throw in some commercials real quick. And you can listen commercial free over at patreon.com/Ryan Singer. $3 a month gets you no commercials. I am in the office, in the studio space all night tonight. And what that means is that I will be putting up some exclusive behind the scenes BTS footage from Mount Shasta for patrons only. That'll be going up in the next day or two. By the time you hear this, it'll be up by the end of the weekend, I'm certain. You know, and then potentially some other things as well coming next week. I got a bunch of interviews lined up. I'm excited about. You can listen to all those without commercials, and you can get bonus stuff over at patreon.com/Ryan Singer. $3 a month for all the good stuff. And there's actually higher tiers than that as well. But $1 a month if you just want to show some support, and every once in a while probably get a free ad-free episode. The $1 a month, you know, well, I appreciate the support. It helps me pay for this, pay the rent on this place. And we're back. Welcome back. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to capitalism. Oh, man, it just makes me want to go to Target and shop, right? I just want to buy things when I hear commercials. I do want to buy a car, and I do want to buy a house. But these are just things because I want to be able to get around, and I want to feel, and I want to own something, I guess. Anyway, I'm talking about Robert Temple and how he's laying out all these very alluring and very exciting principles and clues and connections between the Sirius star and, you know, we're talking about Sirius A, Sirius B, and whether it's the Dogon or whether it is Hercules or whether it's Jason and the Argonauts, Athena. We're talking about the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Sumerians. We're talking about, it's more than just the Dogon. It's when you talk about someone trying to make a through line and show a connection between so many different things that seemingly would be really cool if they were connected, potentially, or be at the very least very fascinating and interesting if they were connected. And he's doing just that. And it's kind of blown my mind a little bit. How can you have your mind kind of blown? I don't know. Diner Dan's trying to get in right now, and I'm not letting him in. We're not having Diner Dan come in right now because he wants to talk about Southern Scrambles again. We already talked about that. So anyway, sorry about that. If you listen to the program, you know who Diner Dan is. He's just a guy who loves diners. You can't be mad at him about that. You had your mind blown. We know the Big Bear Diner or Black Bear Diner. You called it the Big Bear Diner. I did. Diner Dan does not like it when I mispronounce the names of his favorite diners. My apologies, Dan. Huh? Okay. Settle down. Maybe Diner Dan should do the next commercial. I'm going to have Diner Dan do commercials from here on out. You want to do that? You want to come in and do the live reads? Sure. You're watching the video. You see me looking to the side as if Diner Dan actually exists. This is called committing. This is being acting. Anyway, Temple is laying out all of these correlations between the Greeks, the Egyptians, the Sumerians, and the Dogon. And he's using timelines. He's using also stories. And I was alluding to this fact earlier a little bit when I was mentioning how can you tell the difference between a story, just a good story, and a historical account? And oftentimes, can't they be both? And just because something is a story doesn't mean it's not representative of what has happened. I mean, we see that in, you know, our movies and our television all the time, you know, things that are based on true events, et cetera, et cetera. But what's interesting here, what Temple is laying out is the commonalities and the through line about Sirius, specifically the number 50. There were 50 oarsmen on the Argo. There were, you know, 50, whenever the number 50 shows up, whether it's 50 daughters or 50 sons or 50 oarsmen or 50 Anunnaki, which comes up as well, that's significant because it is representative of time. It's not representative of, you know, 50 Anunnaki, right? Who are all nameless. So, you know, someone's not important necessarily, right? As an individual, if they're not given a name. So when we look through back through some of these stories and these legends, and we realize that sometimes they're not given names, that's a tip, that's a clue to us that maybe the totality of this group that they're a part of, that's numbered 50 specifically when it comes to the Sirius mystery, is indicative of the orbit of Sirius B. And we're talking about the 50 months, I believe. And the 100 months is the, you know, so whenever there's 50 or 100, I'm not doing it justice right now. I've got a bunch of stuff written down somewhere. I don't want to just be looking at all my notes. But that's how you do things like this, you know? Now my phone is not recognizing my face. There we go. I broke down. I'm doing the face thing. But it's like, my phone already has my face. I've taken a selfie in my life. My phone has my face. Okay, so here's some notes I've got written down. This is kind of the gist of it, right? So Sirius was astronomically the foundation for the entire Egyptian religious system. Its celestial movements determined the Egyptian calendar, aka the Sothic calendar. Its heliacal rising marked the beginning of the Egyptian year and roughly coincided with the flooding of the Nile. Parenthetically, Plutarch says that Nile was sometimes called Sirius, which is an interesting fact. The new year was the heliacal rising, heliacal, however we want to call it, the heliacal rising of Sirius after 70 days of being out of sight, 7 Anunnaki times 10 days, or in the underworld before being reborn. Egyptians would always and strictly stick to the 70-day period for embalming mummies. Now there's Sirius temples, the Isis at Dendera. Research the Black Rite ritual is a note I have said to myself, referenced by Isis and others. Each 10 days, a client calendar had a god associated with it. I don't know if client, maybe that was a typo on my part. I'm going to have to go back and look at this. So 7 underworld Anunnaki could mean 70 days by this math. So what is the relevance if 50 Anunnaki or 500 days? What is that relevance there? But what we have here is we have astronomically Sirius is the star of the show, pun intended. And Temple also talks about how pun has caused certain problems. In ancient times, cultures loved pun, not as like party jokes to elicit great laughter, but to in use of metaphor as a device, right? To pass along real information through story. And for some reason, we hate pun so much. I'm not sure why. I love pun. I always have. And after learning that little tidbit, I became even more in love with pun. But Sirius is like the boss, is the star of the show. And astronomically speaking, has so much importance. And there is so much importance attributed to Sirius in across cultures. And the skeptic might say, well, that's because we were stupid and we kind of love stars, the sky, and we attributed power and things like that to it, or gods, et cetera, et cetera. But I think what that person is forgetting is, first of all, they probably don't know what they're talking about. And secondly, what they're forgetting is we're talking about a calendar system, you know, at its heart in many aspects to certain people. And there are certain things about that calendar system that center around Sirius that involve the number 50 that show up in so many different stories that show you that they're all originating. This is where it gets profound, I think. Not by my discovery, but where it becomes profound is this number 50 showing up in all these different places, it shows you that all of these different cultures have these different stories that are originating from the same story, right? From a story, from the story. And we're talking about gods and goddesses. We're talking about the beginning of mankind. We're talking about knowledge, art, creativity, culture, civilization, et cetera, et cetera. Why did every or all of these cultures place such a high level of importance on Sirius? Whether and how did they have such deep, intimate knowledge of Sirius and Sirius B when they didn't have telescopes, when it's invisible to the eye, you could never see it, right? And how do they know the orbit? How do they know the time that it will be orbiting? This is what Temple is getting at in this book, right? This mystery surrounding Sirius. And Sirius is heavily associated with East. And, you know, personally, that's that there's a bug in here. And I've got carrots and hummus out. Personally, I love that because in the documentary series, The Bridge, that I'm making, I'm eating some red pepper hummus before it falls on the table. East is what comes through. East is the big message that shows up over and over and over again as a message through the gateway to Mice. And East it is. Why is East the direction where altars are supposed to be built or set up in all magical practice? Altars should face East. Offerings to the East. All of this goes back to Sirius. And all of it goes back to a story. Whether the and the story gets passed on and on, it changes forms and changes cultures, yet somehow the messaging remains the same. The clues are there and Temple has uncovered them. That's why he's so excited in this book. And imagine being someone who has pieced something together like this. My buddy Bernie, you know, I got to talk to him. It's been a while. The Hidden Face of Orion. I got to talk to Bernie again. Bernie Taylor, who wrote the book, The Hidden Face of Orion. I'm pretty sure that's the name of it. I haven't talked about that book in quite a while. So, but what a book. What a book. Somebody should just put that up on loop. What a book. Anyway, people get excited when they piece something together. By the way, Bernie, who found all these other faces and animals and things like that in the ancient cave art. I want to say Nazca. I'm going to sound like an idiot because I'm going to say the wrong thing. But piecing something together and then having obviously the excitement, wanting to share it would be obvious, especially when you believe it's a somewhat profound breakthrough. Like Temple obviously clearly believes, and I'm inclined to think he was probably right. And by probably, I mean, I'm going with it. I'm leaning into it. But what you have here is you have an interesting foundation. And I'm not trying to like make a big jump here to tie all this together, but shape-shifting is what got me here, right? And we're talking about foundational principles and foundational aspects or characteristics of a thing, of a phenomena, of an idea. And shape-shifting, I believe, is foundational. And whether it's gods, animals, humans, spirits, whatever, shape-shifting into this or that or from to, that's not what's important. What's important is shape-shifting is also foundational. as an element. It's a foundational element of this original, these original stories, these old stories that are giving us glimpses into the history, into the beginnings of our existence, and quite possibly are showing or are shedding light on a source, an intelligent thing that may have been transferred to us from possibly someone else, and even more possibly somewhere else. And where is that somewhere? Somewhere in the Sirius star area, system, whatever, star area. Let's get out the map of the star areas. I mean, it's just, it's not too much to try to understand. I mean, because I think, you know, my question is, like, what do you lose out of your brain when you try to put all this in there? It's like, oh, I don't remember how to make eggnog now. Like, I don't remember how to make eggnog because I'm trying to remember all the different stories that have the number 50 in it, whether it's the Anunnaki or the Argonauts or whatever else, and sewing the teeth. And anyway, Hercules had sex with 50 daughters. Which sounds crazy. Some guy's like, hey, Hercules, I want you to have sex with all 50 of my daughters that I had. No one talks about the mother who had to give birth to these 50 daughters. Like, essentially, like, boom, 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 boom. The point of that story is the number 50. It's not about the daughters, and it's not about Hercules having sex with Hercules, also known as Jason. Arc. I mean, there's so many, all of these things. I mean, Temple does a really good job of laying this out. I can't recommend that book highly enough, even though it is, like I said, it's a dense read, but he really lays it out and he gets into it and makes the connections for you, because he did all the heavy lifting and all the research and all the work and all the reading. I have bought no fewer than probably 7 books because of reading this one book, which is indicative to me of how good of a book it is. But I've got a few books lined up that are in my queue next. But in the meantime, what I'm trying to do is, I'm rereading the Epic of Gilgamesh currently right now. I started it last night or the day before, which is, you know, it can be a difficult read too, because it's incomplete and it's whatever. What translation are you gonna put your money on? Whose translation of it, right? Anyway, that's not important. It's not important. There's a TV show called Rabbit Hole on, I think it's on Paramount Plus, starring Kiefer Sutherland. And this isn't giving anything away, by the way, because I think it's a relatively new television show. One of the characters is this really super rich guy, and he's got one of the tablets of the Epic of Gilgamesh in his office in like a protective glass. And it's like, you know, to those who know what the Epic of Gilgamesh is, you could not do a better job of showing just how stupid rich someone is beyond understanding. That's, you know, billionaire type rich. When you have the Epic of Gilgamesh in your office, a piece of it, like, get at it. You have the piece of the oldest thing, you're an asshole, right? So anyway, but we're talking about foundational and origin stories, and shapeshifting is my origin story. I believe that the Sirius story and, you know, the idea that something and or someone from Sirius, potentially who bestowed upon human beings all this great knowledge, right? That's what we're trying to figure out. Is this just a great story, or is this a historical account embedded in storytelling across all these different cultures? And is there a reason why it made it through and it lasted this long, and that people eventually figured it out? potentially about what it means. And is it that crazy of an idea to think that human beings are not responsible for our own advancement? I think that's a sticking point for some people. They don't want to think about that because they want to think that not only they are, but the species of human being is so self-sufficient and so aspirational and dominant over this planet as the elite species, which that is a hard thing to get somebody to let go of. Even people who don't go around talking about how great human beings are, people who never think about this stuff, when asked or when pressed into a conversation that deals with this, most people just assume we're better than every other animal on the planet and more intelligent, more advanced, just better than. And it's one of those default modes that has been, I guess, beaten into us, at least here in the Western world, for so long. And there's been such an effective job of doing so that it is almost understood knowledge that we're the best. And people do not want to have a conversation around the fact that we might not be. And yeah, it's hierarchical. It's hierarchical thinking, whatever. It's better than, less than thinking. It is this or that. You're either smart or dumb. You're either great or you suck. We all know that's not the case. Okay, I think we're gonna put a bow on this one. Maybe be a little shorter. This is a fine length. This is more than fine. So Shapeshifter Summer, here we come. I am going to do my damnedest and I'm putting the call out again. Like, if you have any experience or knowledge of shapeshifting or have witnessed such a thing, I implore you to reach out to me. Even if you don't want to be on even if it's not for the podcast, I've had that happen. And anonymity is key. And I won't give away that information, your name or whatever else. Alex Mistretta, who's been on the show, has witnessed it. My buddy Mishka, who was on the show a few years back, at least now, witnessed it. Some guy came up to me after a comedy show and told me that he witnessed it in me. And then outside of that, there's anonymity involved. And, this is not like I'm holding some government secret or something, right? Or some profound mystery of the universe underneath my hat that would change the way that human beings live their lives every day. I don't have that kind of secret. I'm not holding that kind of information. Okay. Hey, what's that? The Southern Scramble. Dan wants you to know that the Southern Scramble at the Black Bear Diner in Mount Shasta is a can't miss menu item. Yeah. Southern Scramble. Diet Coke with that or a coffee? Depends on what time it is. You're right. So if you've been up for a while, maybe Diet Coke. If you're kind of just waking up, coffee. Okay. Diner Dan likes cream. He likes cream in his coffee. Anyway, thank you for listening. I appreciate you. I've got a bunch of tour dates coming up. I just booked Key West is now on the schedule in August. I will be at Hot Alien Summer Camp in August in Tennessee as well. I believe that's the 18th of August, which is, I don't know what night of the week that is. It's probably a Friday. I'm all over the place. I'm going to be back in Indianapolis. I'm going to be in Mason City, Illinois. I'm going to be in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm going to be in Charlotte for the Charlotte Comedy Festival in September. I'm going to be in Santa Cruz. I'm going to be in Sacramento for a couple shows in the Auburn area and then maybe Sacramento as well. I'll also be at the San Francisco Punchline on it's a Tuesday night. I'd love to pack this place out with a bunch of beautiful weirdos. Let me give that date. We are looking at September 19th, the San Francisco Punchline. Tell a friend, bring a weirdo, bring a crystal lover, crystallize.app. Still got the app, still out there going with it. Free download. We are adding 200 crystals to the identification capabilities as soon as they get done getting trained. So that'll be 300 crystals in the brain now, which is very exciting. So RyanSingerComedy.com. /tour if you just want to go straight to the tour stuff. But yeah, RyanSingerComedy.com's got everything. Please give me a follow on social media at RySing on Instagram, RyanSingerComedy on TikTok. You know, please rate and review the podcast. I'd love that. And share it with a friend. That really helps. You know, get the word out there. Shapeshifter Summer 2023. 30-year bonuses are going to be shapeshifter heavy, is what that means. And then potentially, we're waiting to hear, potentially some more interviews regarding the topic of shapeshifting. No one on this planet would be more surprised than yours truly if I were to ever have another interview with my ex who could shapeshift. I think there is as close to a 0% chance of that happening as could be possible. So the fact that we even had that one, experience 76, in case you're wondering. I still am in shock that the original interview happened. So yes, shapeshifting is not a paranormal phenomena. It is a fundamental aspect of the paranormal. It is a part of the paranormal fabric, right? It is part of all paranormal phenomena. Yikes. And we just figured that out. Hope to see you at a live show. If not, I'll see you at the watering hole on the astral plane.